Hey, what's going on? It's Dr. Mike T. Nelson here with not just another fitness podcast for fitness geeks only. And this week we are talking about a concept called G-Flux, which is the first time I heard about that was from Dr. John Berardi. This is going back, maybe early 2000s. I'm trying to think of when the first seminar I went to was with him and Charles Poliquin at the Poliquin Center in Chicago, Illinois. That was actually the first time I was able to see both of them present. So very different styles of presenting, if you're familiar with both of those individuals. And I had heard about it initially from John Berardi's work on T Nation. So I will link to an article, but you can find it called The G-Flux Redux, an interview with Dr. John Berardi by Chris Shugart. This is originally published over at T Nation in October of 2008. And the concept of this is you, in essence, are pulling more energy through the system, right? And if we look at this concept, we'll talk about a new paper published in Nutrients that just came out about a month ago or so. But one of the things I've always wondered about is if you talk to people who just do the old calories in, calories out, bro, is there really any difference to someone who, well, for the sake of argument now, is just weight stable at, we'll say, 2,000 calories, right? So they are taking in 2,000 calories. They're being a good person, quote unquote, and having their protein and their vegetables and everything is in line. They're taking in 2,000 calories and they are burning 2,000 calories. So they are weight stable in this argument. Now, what happens if we compare that to someone who is also weight stable at 4,000 calories per day? They're taking in 4,000 calories and they are burning 4,000 calories. Is there really any difference between these two individuals? And for the sake of argument, we'll even say that they are twins, right? So their genetic material is very similar. And we can kind of throw that out as a difference. And let's say they kind of follow each other around, and we'll even make the argument that they're doing kind of similar types of exercise. Well, obviously, if you're burning through 4,000 calories per day, you may be a larger mammal, which makes that easier. You obviously are doing a lot more work in movement to burn through almost twice the amount of calories. And where I think this is very interesting is, as I've been working with clients for many, many years now, think about the clients that I've had where they're just completely stuck. They can't seem to make any more progress. And a vast majority of the time, if we're assuming it's not just some type of behavior that they are executing the plan, most of the time I find that they tend to get very stuck at low levels of calories, right? Around, let's say, 1,250 calories in and out. They're weight stable there, but they can't seem to lose any more at that point. So even when we cut their calories, and granted, there's not a lot to cut from at that point, which makes this another issue, they just don't seem to get the same results as someone who is up at a much higher caloric value. One, we actually do have somewhere to cut from. If you're weight stable at 4,000 calories, right, you're at a higher starting point. So you actually have somewhere to go. If you're at 1,250, man, no one wants to live their life eating around just 800 calories per day. So just from the sheer math, we already see that there's a big difference between those two. And if you think about adherence, right? So adherence is obviously going to be a huge component of it. Some people would argue the main component. Trying to adhere to a 1,000 calorie a day diet or 800 calorie per day diet is just insane, right? Maybe you can do it for a very short period of time if you're really trying to get ultra lean for competition or something like that. But it's not something I would say is long-term sustainable, right? So at the lower kind of energy flux, we've already got one strike against it, being that you don't really have anywhere else to go, especially when we're talking about what can you do to make this process sustainable in the long term. So this week we're talking about long-term sustainable weight loss. And the main question that this comes back to is, why are we doing exercise? Why don't we just cut calories? Right? So the calories in, calories out, people would say that it doesn't matter. You know, both of those people are weight stable. If we just cut some more calories, then everything will work out well. And what I've observed is that doesn't appear to be the case. Now, it is true from just the argument of physics on paper that the physics will still work out. But when we take people and we drop them into the real world, which if you're a trainer, that's obviously where you're working with people. You're not working with people that are isolated and secluded off on a ranch like The Biggest Loser, where everything is done for them in an absolute controlled environment, or any type of metabolic ward study where we're trying to control everything in an isolated environment. So the question comes back to, why do we need to do exercise when on paper we can show that just cutting calories is quote unquote more beneficial? So my first argument I'm going to make here is that the different level of energy flux through the system, which I credit Dr. John Berardi of initially talking about this related to G-flux, I mean, over probably a decade plus ago now, I think there is a very big difference between those two cases, right? Even being weight stable at 2,000 calories in versus 2,000 out, compare that to 4,000 calories in and 4,000 calories out. Now, if we fast forward to today, there has been a lot more research in this area, although I would say this is still a very new concept. And for all the PubMed ninjas who want, you know, ultra randomized controlled trials on absolutely everything, we don't have those yet. And the reality is we may never have those on something that's as complicated as weight maintenance. So I refer you to a brand new paper from Christopher Melby. This is called Increase in Energy Flux to Maintain Diet-Induced Weight Loss. Again, this is a concepts paper in the journal Nutrients, and this was published on October 21st, 2019. And their kind of argument, and they present a lot of really good data here, that a higher flux of pulling more calories through the system is going to be beneficial for long-term weight loss. Now, again, we don't have a ton of randomized controlled trials, especially chronic studies for months on end, but we do have lots of other data that is supportive of this. And one of the things that they're using as a definition of flux here is, if we want to be technical, what we're going to do is we can define that by a couple different ways, right? So one of the examples they have here is we can have people at a higher energy flux, right? So just more movement through the system of calories. And within that, they could still be in a caloric surplus or a caloric deficit, right? So if we use our example of 2,000 calories as a low flux, we could put that person in a caloric deficit at 1,500 calories per day. Again, we could also do that with our 4,000 calorie stable person. They could be in a reduction at 3,500 calories per day, which obviously I would argue is going to be more stable. In the review paper, then they also make a really good argument that we can go a little bit further and we can probably try to standardize this to body size. So one of the equations they give here is, quote, one possibility is to express flux as a multitude of resting energy expenditure. Right, so RE, resting energy expenditure, is just how many calories you're burning at rest. So they're saying that we can take your total daily energy expenditure, right? So how many calories are you burning through per day? And then just divide that by your resting energy expenditure. So this is going to give us a way of looking from a research standpoint at people who are different body sizes. Because it may be kind of surprising to you that most people who are more overweight or obese, because they are larger and they have to carry around all this weight, their resting energy expenditure is actually higher on average, right? They're expending more energies because they just have a lot more tissue in order to support, right? So they're using the definition here of total daily energy expenditure divided by resting energy expenditure as something they call a metabolic scope. So in research, we kind of use terms interchangeably. So looking at flux, as John Bardi called it, G-flux, or metabolic scope, these are kind of different ways of trying to figure out how we can take all this data and look at it and determine what's going on for these changes. They also cite some very interesting studies here. One of them was from monozygotic twins, right? So genetically considered equal, provides hereditary estimates of up to 70 to 80% for various measures of body size. Now, at first, that may make you think, oh my God, like all of this is just genetically controlled. However, when they put these same people, and again, those studies were just looking at them kind of like an epidemiologic kind of observational study. However, when they put them in well-controlled overfeeding studies, they did this again with monozygotic male twins, there was a significant greater concordance in weight gain and body composition within the twin pairs as compared to just the other pairs. However, a lot of the other supportive data hasn't really agreed that the genetic component is all that high. So again, we're still trying to figure out exactly how much genetics play a role, but they do definitely play a role. And at the end of the day, I would argue it's kind of a mute argument anyway, because your genetic component, whatever that is, right now we can't really change it unless you get into germline editing and a whole bunch of other stuff that may happen in the future. So either way, whatever the genetic component is, and I think that study overestimates it, we can't do a whole lot about it. So coming up the rest of this week here, we're going to talk about what are some of the different things that you can do. What are kind of the maximum and kind of numbers that you should shoot for in order to use this concept of flux? Should you make an argument of prioritizing exercise first compared to calories? And my argument is that in a nutshell, exercise is extremely beneficial for maintenance of weight loss. So there's supportive data that it may be changing structures in the brain. Again, there's some other supportive data looking at sedentary populations and populations that move around more. What we see is as you move around more, right? So you're pulling more calories through the system, that you do not always overeat to make up that difference, right? So it may be that your appetite is better maintained. Again, there is some very good supportive data looking at this. And some of this data, I'll just mention it real quick here, is from a researcher called Mayer. And he first suggested that these high levels of physical activity are associated with more precise regulation of energy balance. So if we go all the way back, we think that compliance is kind of the number one driver for long-term weight loss maintenance. Having higher levels of physical activity may reset your body so that you are more able to maintain energy balance kind of in an unconscious way. So some of the work he did was looking at mill workers, and they saw this U-shaped relationship between energy intake and physical activity requirements related to the workers' positions, right? So in that study, they have some people that move around more, and they have other people who are more sedentary. So individuals who had the most sedentary occupation consumed as much energy as those performing jobs required heavy and very heavy work. So obviously this resulted in a higher body weight among sedentary workers compared to average workers, right? So it is not necessarily true that just because you are more active does not 100% mean that you are going to eat more, right? And I have some other stuff coming up even next week, talking about ways you can kind of sneak calories out of the system without potentially affecting that appetite regulation. So takeaway for today is talking about the concept of energy flux or G-flux or metabolic scope, pulling more calories and energy through the system. Our bias is that if you do more of that, you're better able to maintain long-term weight loss. And that is going to help compliance because you do not have to rely as much on willpower. And then we'll come up, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the differences related to this, looking at the concept of either a high or a low energy flux, why just walking around more is beneficial, but only up to a specific point. And tomorrow we're going to talk about the misunderstood role of muscle in calories burned, right? Because one of the arguments made in fitness all the time, and I know I've been 100% guilty of making this argument in the past, is that, hey, you just need to go lift more weights to add more muscle to increase your metabolic rate substantially, and that makes everything else equal. And what we'll learn tomorrow is that's not necessarily true. Unfortunately, that simple story does not hold out. So thank you for listening to this one. I greatly appreciate it. If you enjoyed these concepts and you want to know more about this in a system that you can use with clients or on yourself, head on over to flexdiet.com, FLEXDIET.com. And there we'll have all the information on the Flex Diet certification. You can get signed up on the waitlist. Also put you on the newsletter for all the other information. So head on over to flexdiet.com. Thank you very much.